Our Torah portion this week, Vayera, is bookended by two of the most important moral dilemmas in the Bible. They are among the best-known passages in all of human literature. Most of you know it well. Towards the beginning of the parsha, we read of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And at the end of the parsha, we read of Abraham's binding of his child Isaac. In the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, the moral dilemma is social. It relates to society, what we might call today policy. It's not a personal dilemma. It's a communal dilemma. The potential killing of innocent people, in this case, total strangers to Abraham. In the case of Abraham and Isaac, it is entirely personal. There are no communal ramifications. It is one man and his family. In both instances, Abraham is the central figure. In the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, he is what we might call today a social activist. He is relentless. Abraham argued with God and tried everything in his power to save the lives of innocent people. And his efforts almost paid off. After he pronounces his jacuz, will the judge of all the earth not do justice? God is convinced. It's almost as if God responds, I will do justice. But in this case, there are only guilty people. There are not even 10 righteous people in Sodom and Gomorrah. And the implication is that had Abraham found 10 righteous people, God would have spared the decree. Even though Abraham didn't succeed in preventing the annihilation of Sodom and Gomorrah, the lesson was learned by social activists throughout the ages, and they took heart. The human task is to pursue justice. God is a God of justice. We must advocate for justice, even if it involves arguing with God, what we might call today speaking truth to power. In fact, our parasha clarifies, I have singled out Abraham so that he may instruct his children and his posterity to do tzedakah u'mishpat, righteousness and justice. But the same Abraham who was so intent on justice at the beginning of the parsha is completely silent at the end of the parsha when it comes to his own son. There's no mention of his arguing with God, no mention of justice, no mention of the innocence of Isaac. There is no pathos. Abraham doesn't express personal disappointment. He doesn't say, you mean to tell me after all these years of faithfully following you, in the end, this is what I get from you? There's none of the passion that this man demonstrated for complete strangers four chapters before. There's only submission. Now, how do we explain this? How could Abraham have been so committed to the welfare of society on the one hand, and when it came to his own family, he was silent? I think that the Bible is trying to convey through Abraham that these are the moral dilemmas of people. We have moral obligations to society. Social policy must be just, and we must be active in influencing policies. We must speak truth to power. And we have moral obligations to each other. Personal interaction with others must also be moral. Paradoxically, like in Abraham's case, it is often easier for some people to fight for communal justice, to fight for complete strangers in the abstract, than it is to pursue our obligations to our own family and with others with whom we interact individually. We can only imagine what would have been Sarah's response if God had come to Sarah and said, bring your son, your only son, up to the mountain. She would have told God in no uncertain terms, no way. Take my life instead. Now, since I'm in public life, I can tell you that I have known many public personalities whose capacity for public morality is practically limitless. They can be prophetic in their concern and passion for justice and unflagging in their energy. They have strong beliefs about social policy. Since we are on the verge of midterm elections in this country, we can readily appreciate the enormous convictions and emotions of these people. They argue eloquently and passionately over policies. But some of those very people who are so committed to social justice can be so detached from moral behavior on a personal basis. I've seen many people who are so strong in public and so weak in private. They can give the most amazing speeches about tzedakah u'mishpat, about justice and righteousness, but fold so easily under pressure. For them, it is often much easier to stand up for the principles on the stump than to say no to someone in their office. They insist on public trust, but cheat on their loved ones. They demand fidelity to laws, but break them when no one is looking. They decry immigration policies and hire illegal immigrants. They wax eloquent about protecting workers and treat their own employees poorly. The very layout of this week's Torah portion serves to remind us that both the public and the private, both the communal and the personal, are fundamental to moral life. I meet with our teenagers regularly, and I always raise moral questions with them. This week, I asked their views of Tyler Clementi, the young Rutgers student who jumped off the GW bridge after his roommates disseminated a video of his sexual contact with a gay partner. Our kids are great people. They are far better in so many ways than what I remember myself to have been at that age. But they do not receive moral training. A number of them mentioned to me that they had assemblies and other gatherings in their school about the Rutgers student. But my sense is that the schools were as concerned about their legal exposure as they were about the students' moral exposure to one another. There are no ethics courses in schools. The schools don't even see this as their responsibility. Their task is to teach math, not morals. They teach value, not values. Worth in school is ranked by grades, not goodness. And that's why I focus on moral issues every chance I get with them. I want them not only to say the politically correct things for public consumption, but I also want them to reflect deeply about their moral obligations to one another in private, so that by the time that they are on their own, by the time they go to college, they will consider it abhorrent to trample on the dignity and privacy of other human beings. That it is not only about being the valedictorian, it is also about being the validatorian, to validate others. I want them to appreciate that what distinguishes the human creature is our capacity for goodness. Of all the creatures of the world, only the human creature is concerned with ethics and morals. I want them to think deeply about the key phrase in the Sodom and Gomorrah passage: I have singled out Abraham to do what is just and what is right. Doing what is just and right in public and in private, in the marketplace and at home, in class and in your dorm. That is the defining aspiration of human beings. It's not always about me. It's not always about reward. It's not always about profit. As Jewish tradition emphasizes, schar mitzvah, mitzvah. The reward of the mitzvah is the mitzvah. We live in an era when we grant to ourselves exceptional importance and preeminence. We seem to care only about our own advancement and our own needs. And I press the students. I said to them, you're the first generation who will grow up with these so powerful communication and social networking capacities. It was bad enough in the past when you spoke ill of somebody and it could spread around the village or the town. But today, if you take a picture of someone in a private moment, It is forever recorded permanently in the annals of human civilization. It can never be eliminated. It can never be expunged. I reminded our students that Jewish tradition said it best. What is hateful to you, do not do unto others. To believe that what applies to you also applies to another person is the easiest equation to grasp intellectually and the hardest to implement physically. But that equation, what is hateful to you, do not do unto others, that equation is at least as important as the equation 2 + 2 = 4. In my mind's eye, I imagine God urging Abraham, plead for the life of your son, Isaac, like you pleaded for the lives of complete strangers. Public morality begins with personal morality. Do justice at home as well. Do what is right at home as well. Why? Not for reward, not for advancement, not for public recognition, not because someone has told you, but simply because it is the right thing to do. It is the human thing to do. In the end, there are no objective circumstances that will compel us to do what is right and what is just. There are no objective circumstances that will compel us to treat others as we would like to be treated. There is no law to compel me to treat you with kindness, compassion, generosity, goodness, respect, dignity, or even politeness. These obligations are in the realm of conscience, morality, or if you are religious, obligations demanded by God because we are human. We obey these obligations because of some innate human compulsion. But these obligations are real, and they are important, and it is they that define who we are. And every moral discussion, every sermon, every book, every work of art, music, or literature that bring us closer to understanding these obligations and incorporating them into our lives bring us ever closer to understanding our true human essence. Ki yedaativ la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, for I have singled you out to do what is just and to do what is right. Amen. We turn to page 146 for the Baruch Hu and we rise.